Good, just the drama of one's life, which you watch just like everything else.
I can't imagine that you have any drama, Jake.
No, I do. Totally. It's good stuff though. It's good fuel for your everything is your practice, right? You just put it into you, because if you have things that take you down, that makes you feel, if you feel like pain in you, then that helps wake you up to the fact that you're, because that is really literally what it is, right? When you're feeling pain and discomfort, you're ongoing becoming unconscious, and it can actually become like a, it's literally a little trigger to get back to consciousness when you're, so it's sort of like the ebb and flow of your daily drama is fuel for keeping you awake. But yeah, totally, I have drama. Crazy, crazy drama right now. It feels actually crazier than ever, which seems to me right on track, because I feel like we are reaching this nexus point. So the personal things in my life seem at the same time to be like, reaching all their sort of little, the little peaks of intrigue and drama and stuff. So it's really interesting.
You have a pretty good outlook about the future. I mean, as far as I don't know, man. Do you? I'm just contact everywhere. Contact, 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 contact. Do you think that?
It's heavy today. Like, is I remember the seeing the poster for First Contact, Star Trek First Contact, and the date on that is today's date. Just in,
Oh,
it was
shit.
released in 1996, right?
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah. So if you look at the poster for that, it's 11/22. So that's pretty interesting. And then yesterday was the birthday of the girl, and then Jodie Foster's birthday was just before, it's just contact, 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 contact the whole month. And we've now entered Sagittarius, so I think, we're right on that cusp, so
That's fucked
this
up.
is it's an interesting, and I it really feels like we're now so close to 2012, so I think it's just going to be stupid this year, and now we're really in it.
So, Will, the episode is up now. I think you can listen to it.
Okay.
But
I'll skip around down and see if
If there,
it's blank noise towards the end.
oh my God, wouldn't that be perfect? Because it would be like Airways, contact report where she went through the wormhole and all you got back was noise.
Oh, that's tight. 18 hours of just total silence.
Oh.
11/22/96. That's fucking crazy because that's that cancer symbol too of 9 and 6. I'm looking at the First Contact poster.
That's right. I was thinking the same thing. Yeah, it's 11/22. It's today. I mean, in a way, you start to realize sync is about this moment, right? And it'll be the same next year, but clearly that movie's about this moment, about right now, and when you realize the sync. So.
Do you think that it's just a symbol for some kind of other? I mean, because like what Jim said, that sync somehow the signal. And
Yeah.
I like the movie The Knowing because they said that the ones who can't hear the voices, you know what I mean? So in a way, like the sync is. Like those who can hear it have a better idea of exactly what's going on and where we're at. It's like a way of keeping certain about things. But there's so much uncertain, there's a ton of uncertainty involved.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's uncertain. It seems very clear to me. I mean, like making a prediction about what's coming, that's always weird. You don't know, but you can definitely tell the trajectory and the overall goal, that those things are clear. But then how that manifests from day to day, no, that's too complex for like just the mind. As individuals, we keep thinking, oh, well, something big is going to happen today because all these syncs are pointing towards today. And then usually the big thing that's happening that day is you're just super aware. And I feel like that's kind of what's happening. You're just charging up that day because you could already feel your awareness from that moment. So you're sort of feeling yourself from the future. That's kind of, I feel like that's sort of how 2012 works. Like we're charging up that day, like 9/11, except with 9/11, we didn't see it from that side. We saw it from the, we only saw it from the opposite side. We only saw it after, right? We only saw 9/11 after it happened, but 2012.
My actual phone rang in real life when you tried calling me again. It's twice now. Stop freaking me out.
Oh, that went really well, Jeremy. You know, it's weird, too, because I just finished reading Moonchild by Aleister Crowley, and there's a similar thing that happens in that book. Like, she's talking to this old lady in the spirit world, but her words are always, like, jumbled and loaded. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, well, Moonchild, of course, is the name Bastion gives to the childlike empress to save Fantasia. Right. If there's any other nerds out there.
Oh, yeah, sure.
He put on the subtitle. You can't hear what he says, but he put on the subtitles. And he says Moonchild. Right. And in the movie The Lost Boys, Michael is trying to get with the Star of David, the girl named Star.
Right.
And he's like, oh, Star. Well, my parents tried naming me Moonbeam or Moonchild. So Michael in that movie was supposed to be called Moonchild, according to his character.
Right.
Michael.
Yeah.
Those are worms, Michael.
That all goes into what my, I have that other Beauty and the Beast theme with the Beast, right? And you can see how Crowley is the Beast, right? And so the whole link of King Kong trying to, he's like the alchemical elder king who is impotent but is trying to have a child. You know what I mean?
Well, look at any horror movie or sci-fi movie from the 1950s and 60s, and it's a poster of a giant crab carrying a beautiful woman away, or, you know, some monster that could never get with a human woman.
Right.
Stealing her anyways, you know, a robot or something. Like, what are they going to do with her?
Right, but that's the...
It's almost like the dragon stealing gold.
Right.
In the cave. You know, you can't use it.
That's the whole dragon. I mean, the dragon in the ancient tales hoarded all the gold and hoarded all the women, but or the virgins, but he really couldn't do shit with them. And that even happens in the Immortals. There's a big... It's this weird loop with Mickey Rourke in the movie The Immortals is smashing everybody else's gonads, so they can't have any bloodline. Like, he's, you know, he keeps saying stuff like, "You're the future of your people will have my face," and he actually is looking for this Oracle Virgin at the very beginning too. But see, I've heard, you know, like Joseph Campbell says that that's basically just the it's a symbol for the ego, right? The dragon is the things that you want in material reality that really are of no use to you.
Yeah, that's I think that's probably what I was influenced by, was the mono, the Hero with a Thousand Faces and whatever else of his work I read. Someone tell me they're hearing that too.
Yes. Like, we just stepped over into the land of the dead. Or just like the.
Yeah.
Both my clocks are broken, or like the power went off here yesterday and I didn't reset them. And they just, the alarm went off even though they're blinking simultaneously. They both, two of them went off together.
Like the first part of Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Well, the time travel, too, is like the land of the dead in a lot of ways, almost perfectly lining up with it, in fact.
Actually, just
last night I was reading on that Luminosity blog, the guy was talking about, he has this whole theory about the higher self not being levels of consciousness, but being an actual higher self, like an archangel or a seraph or a daemon, like in the Golden right. Compass. And he speaks about the land of the dead and those and the daemon as communicating with us, as communicating with their own past. Because when you die, you become that thing, or you go to the land of the dead, you know. In a world without time, everything's already happened, so to speak.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of like time travel, like when you talk to an alien or something and they laugh at your concept of time.
Right.
Same you know, thing happening. Like, oh, what's going to happen in the future? And they're like, what future are you talking about?
Yeah, like in John Cale's The Men in Black and the other beings from the supposed aircraft always say, like, in time or see you in time, or they're always making funny references to what time it is and shit like that. Like, it's almost a joke.
Yeah. Then.
Like, time has no meaning. I've seen Grant Morrison, the comic book artist, won Disinfo. Disinfo.com had this conference and he spoke at it one time and he talks about the machine elves like McKenna did and says how it's like the fourth dimension where it's out of time. You know, it's like further right. up the ladder away from time.
Actually, that's in the extra footage for the Hearer's Wisdom video. There's 30-minute clip of like sort of a one main theme that didn't really fit into the whole video. It's on my Vimeo account, and I took that part and put it in there because it kind of goes with this whole hyper-dimensional tentacled being that the human species is, that if you look outside of time or like a worm going from, you know, you go back to your mom and to an egg in your mom. Your mom was born with all the eggs she's ever going to have, and you take her life and go back to her mom, and she's just an egg inside her mom, and you go back and back and back. So you get to the original, and all humans could be traced back to one woman, you know, 2 million years ago or whatever, because all the other bloodlines have died out. So in a hyperdimensional or extra-dimensional sense, it would look like a giant tentacled squid or something.
Interestingly, there's a book that I just discovered called The End of Time, and it's a physicist who decided to not go into his field and explore the idea of the concept of time not really existing, and that there's just a series of nows, and the nows are connected, but they're not sequentially connected. And so it's interesting because this is a theme that keeps arising for me,
Well, see, I know, like, Grant, okay, so you're talking about it's funny because I read a book by Joseph McMonagle, who was one of the original remote viewers in the Army's experiments, and he wrote a book, too, talking about how he really wasn't remote viewing in the sense that people think that he was. It has more to do with time, he said. He's like, you're just remembering stuff that happened to you in the future. So for a remote viewer even to get the information is because he knows the answer to the question in the future. And he just kind of predetermines it.
Well, to know everything, it would be like a future where you're not in your body anymore, where you have access to the Akashic records or whatever, the land of the dead speaking to the past.
Right. But it's like the worm, like you said, and how Grant Morrison said, when we're born, it's not like there's individual nows, but it's like we're just this being that keeps spreading out. And every place that you go, you still are there. It's just like part of the branch of your being that's all through.
Wherever you go, there you are.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, like, it's obviously on purpose. I just don't know if it's nefarious or not, or if it's what.
Well, so purpose. That's get back to that, because that was a lot of the talk last week. With the Gnostic mythology, the purpose is, you know, like to beat the level, to get out of the game.
Find the exit.
Right. And then that even came up, you know, it keeps coming up in a lot of the fictions that I'm reading where the goal is not only for you to get out of the prison, but to get everyone else out of the prison. And then once everyone comes out of the prison, then we, you know, like that's the evolutionary apex or the start of, you know, that's the kill screen and we have to start the game over, or I don't know.
Well, there's the idea that you getting out is getting everyone out. Like the last quote I used in my chapter in the Sync book, which is one of my favorite quotes because it's so like this, is that if you wake from a dream, does it matter that the other people in your dream did not wake as well? Because obviously if you woke from the dream, they're not there anymore.
But something else that's interesting too that I keep coming brushing up against is the idea of, you know, the authority in any situation, and authority comes from author, you know, and a lot of times the characters in the fiction realize that the puppet, you know, their puppets.
Well, that goes back to the never ending story again. It was really weird because I read the Illuminatus trilogy, the Gunslinger series, and the never ending story all back to back. And in those, the characters all wake up and realize they're part of the story. And that happens again
right.
in movies like Inkheart and Stranger Than Fiction. It happens
right.
over and over again. I just think it's really potent in books like Valis and in the Illuminatus trilogy and in Stephen King that seem to have a lot to do. It's sort of like if those movies are ever made from those books, they're going to be really, really powerful sync attractors, in my opinion.
So, like, the waking up is coming out of the story.
Right. Or realizing that you're actually the author.
Realizing
you're
it.
You're the authority, like you said.
Well, it'd be like becoming lucid in a dream.
Right.
You can take control once you become lucid. Otherwise, you're just a, you know, passer or a passive observer of the dream.
But you oftentimes hear authors say, well, you know, this character isn't doing what I want it to do. It has
mind of its own.
Right. Or, you know, it's like I'm just letting the character go.
Well, that's what Stephen King actually says that is his goal, is when you sit down and write to try not to plot. But in a way, you do have to plot. See, that's my theory on how life works in general, is not necessarily that it's free choice or not necessarily it's like predetermined destination at all. Well,
have you guys seen, sorry to cut you off there, but if I don't say it, I'll forget, Adaptation with Nicolas
sure.
Cage?
Yeah.
And... you know, in that, I mean, the movie's written by the screenwriter, and he's writing about himself as a screenwriter who's trying to adapt this book that has no story, apparently.
And it goes out of control.
And so he goes to a writing class, and the guy says, you have to have, you know, you have to make a, yeah, there's a story there, you have to find it. And what they do, which one of my friends is a film buff, told me is they tell you what they're going to do, and then they do it. They tell you that we're going to F with you now because we're just going to make up a story. So everything that happens after that point with the trying to get drugs out of the flowers.
But you really buy into it. Like, dramatically, you become engaged with this yeah. ridiculous story.
But it's kind of, now I'm thinking that it's like he, as a screenwriter, kind of decided to take control. Like, he woke up to this thing going on its own, like he's watching a dream. Then he became lucid about it and said, well, now I'm going to change the story. I'm going to create the story that I want. And he was able to change it after that.
Have you ever seen Monsters and Mazes with Tom Hanks?
I have.
From 1982.
He climbs to the top of the Twin Towers and almost kills himself. It's a very important movie.
But it's interesting because they're playing D&D, you know, and they're playing a character, and they have a good time playing the character, but Tom Hanks gets stuck in the game. He thinks he is his character and then tries to act the game out, you know, whereas the rest of his D&D crew, they play the game for a while, and then there's a separation between the game where they're pretending to be this character, and then they come back to... It's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know what relevance it has to our... I mean, it's Land of the Dead kind of stuff, but it's interesting because...
Well, see,
it's almost like we're...
It hinges, once again, though, on the World Trade Center, is the way that I interpret that. I mean, because it's another split, like we were talking with reality, like the second reality going on, you know, through psychosis. And I don't know. It's just it's interesting.
It might just be
down to. It's almost like projecting the World Trade Center as a wake-up call. It's like waking you up to the second reality or the game that's being played perpendicular to this one.
Let me just get my thoughts together. Okay, so New York is a weird place. It's got Montauk on the mainland, you know, with the Montauk experiments and the Montauk monster and underground bases. And whatever, and then you have Manhattan, which is, I mean, the island of Manhattan, which is like the primordial mound, like Jake's pointed out, with the two pillars and the two big pyramids and so on. Is it that it's archetypal in that the land of the dead is like this realm, like in Constantine, is the moment you cross over, everything's exactly the same. All the buildings are there, you know, the cars are there on the road, but it stays like that forever. And it's like this guy Dan Mitchell, he has a theory about the daemon or whatever is being your own archetype, the perfect you that you become right. Once you die. And it everything kind of has its archetype, and the land of the dead is the archetype of the land of the living. And that area, geographically, in the land of the dead, even though it may not have exact time and place, but still, like, if you cross over at that place, that's an important place, perhaps. And that the archetype of that area is so strong that it's bleeding through and it's causing, you know, weird things to happen there or be drawn to that place.
Well, see, the thing that I feel about it is, okay, it's almost like a character in all the movies that it's in. I mean, New York, the city itself, because like you said, it stays right there. It's static. So it's meant a whole bunch of things to a whole bunch of people. Do you know what I mean? Like, so many certain events have brought a massive amount of consciousness. And so every time you see a movie like the Empire States Building, right, which has been etched in everybody's memory through King Kong and things like that, but you also see it in certain movies. It's just sitting there in the background. It's just kind of kicking it there. And it always has, like, it's almost like a character in the movie. Like, it's just a walk-on character or a cameo, but there it is. I mean, that's the fucking thing that King Kong climbed. It's interesting, we were just talking about Tom Hanks, because I know in Sleepless in Seattle, it's got that imagery, like that's where they go fall in love, is on top of the Empire State Building, because they saw it in a movie, you know what I mean? And it's just like Oz, for somebody who's never been to New York City, like all of these, it has a presence to it, it's like meeting a celebrity almost.
Yeah, and the West Coast has the Bridge of Death, also known as the Golden Gate Bridge.
Right.
Which is in the X-Men movie and the recent Planet of the Apes movie. They cross it.
But, I mean, that's unavoidable. They're Axis Month. It's like you can't really say that the Eiffel Tower in a movie is subliminal because it's a fucking major landmark.
Yeah.
But that one's used a lot, too. I'm just saying, like...
Stop trying to take away from my Golden Gate Bridge.
But it is, though. Like, I know what you mean when you said the... Because it's also in that Aliens versus... Monsters versus Aliens movie. Where that's, like, where the one eye... The all-seeing one eye is decapitated by the Golden Gate Bridge.
It's a part of that movie, but not the whole thing. You got me beat there.
I'm more nerd than you, or...
I got more movie tickets than you do.
It's pathetic, but I don't know, man. It's like a whole nother world. Like, my friends always say, don't you ever go to a movie and just enjoy it for what it is? I'm like, fuck you. I enjoy every movie that I see now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I enjoy it more. I enjoy movies I saw in the past that were just bland entertainment or whatever.
They're crap. They're different now.
Yeah. It's, you know, you see more, I guess. Like, we had this discussion, so you took down the filters a little bit with your research. You see 1% more of the world.
Oh, yes. I know what you're saying. That's why everybody always says it's like sync goggles or whatever. You're putting on this archetypal lens.
Well, it's more like you're taking something off,
it's
really.
It's hyping up, though. Do you agree that it's getting more and more pronounced? Do you think that almost every movie that comes out now has another piece of the puzzle?
I don't know. I see a lot of movies, and there's some, like, there was the one with another Earth or whatever, where there's that parallel Earth that's like merging with this Earth, and then there's the one Melancholy, where the other planet's going to smash into Earth, and there's some other ones, you know, some other ideas that kind of mix into that. And you like, does it have anything to do with like the Nibiru theory, or why are these coming out now? And maybe it's just that because we notice these things, right, that they're more pronounced. So it's more like we're changing. The world keeps going on its path. But, you know, at any point in time, you can come to enlightenment or whatever. You know, the Buddha lived long before there were ever movies. So I think it's more of a personal thing than, I mean, yeah, if I were to make a movie, it would be filled with a lot of weird stuff, that's for sure. But I don't know that it's necessary or that that's a plan or anything.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's almost like an inevitability because it's just a natural progression. More people are introduced to these themes. So, of course, you know, writers, this is going to, it's going to be what inspires writers. When they hear weird ideas and stuff, it gives them ideas for movies. But it seems to be like there's a compile. It's almost like what the tide wave of Terrence McKenna predicted. You know what I mean? Or what even
the concrescence.
Yeah, it's piling up on itself, so the information is speeding around quicker and quicker and making the myths change quicker.
Certainly, yeah, in waking life, not the movie, but in actual waking life that we're having right now, the information's spreading a lot more, because it all exists now, like the Land of the Dead is speaking with us as it's speaking to its past, because everything exists there out of time. But that stuff is just coming into greater awareness as waking life goes on and technology increases. But what is the result of that? I mean, it's a lot. It doesn't appear to be very good looking at the world, but then, you know, is there necessary evil, or what we consider evil is, you know, the devil forcing us into evolution or something like that?
I just read a book, and that was kind of, that was his premise. That so it was kind of taken through the viewpoint of the Inquisition and how, you know, the people perpetrating the Inquisition thought they were doing what was right for God. But they were creating this horrible moment where, you know, it's like Hitler again, where you have this huge not in the fabric of space-time that actually causes evolution, because you have people who were really certain about their actions, but then what they did caused, you know, a psychic trauma to echo throughout our idea of time, you know, where people are still responding to this event that happened. You know what I mean?
It's in, what's that movie? The Celtic Rebel uses it for his intro music. I don't know if he still does, but it's a guy talking on a radio show about the cat and the etymology of French words and so on, because he's in Canada. But one of the things he talks about is sort of the King Kill 33 thing, where the theory after that, after the Kennedy assassination, is that these big events cause ripples in times that go out, and then you can look back and say, well, look at all this stuff leading up to it. We should have been able to see all that. When really, you know, like we've read all the comics and seen all the movies with, you know, the Super Mario Brothers movies, the destroyed towers and so on. We didn't stop and think, well, that's going to happen someday.
Right.
You know, but once the event happens, you could see the ripples going on in time.
Jake almost said the exact same thing. Jake said the exact same thing. And he was like, you know, we only saw 9/11 after it happened, but, you know, 2012 is so strong that we're seeing it beforehand.
Well, I don't know if anyone's seeing what's going to happen, you know.
Do you think it will all make sense afterwards? Like, after it happens, we'll be, like, able to go back through and say, oh, fuck, it was right there. It was, like, throughout his life.
Yeah, I mean, if some people, Goro Adachi and others use that hyperdimensional, you know, calendar or whatever to predict using synchronicity.
But back to the author, I almost think that, you know, the plot is set and that we can run around and have a mind of our own. But as far as changing, I almost feel like Atlantis is sinking. There's nothing we can do.
I don't feel the same way. I feel like what it teaches you is that you are a character in a story, and that the plot isn't set. But I was trying to say earlier, I feel like it's not necessarily that there's a predetermined destination, but it's a little bit of both. Like, the universe is so smart that even if you jump outside, kind of like in that movie, The Adjustment Bureau, like, even if you jump outside of the guidelines you have, you're still going to be able to watch the universe make sense of it. Like, it will, and then that's something that happens in the Neverending Story too. Bastion, or whatever the gay guy's name is, can't leave the story until all the stories are wrapped up. Like, he tries to leave the book because the longer he stays in the book, the more he forgets who he really is. And towards the end of the book, you know, they finally get to the Ouroboros, and they're like, well, you can't leave till the stories are wrapped up. And Atreyu goes, well, I'll finish the stories for him, and allows Bastion to leave. But it's so I feel like there's.
Well, I wonder if like the idea of a daemon or an archetypal higher self, if that's what Bastion and Atreyu are.
Well, it just is
Bastion's the daemon? Capital S self.
The question is Bastion's Atreyu's daemon? I like James Hill, who just died recently, because I'm reading his, and his book on the daemon is a little bit different. You know, there's Anthony Peake. I don't know if you've ever investigated him, but he thinks that before we die, our brain lives the rest of our lives over again, and the higher part of ourself that's already lived is the daemon that gives us help and guidance.
I almost mentioned that. I haven't heard of that, but I have had the theory that the sort of time loop theory, but in your personal life, like, we've all had deja vu, but sometimes you have deja vu where you're like, you know what's going to happen next and next and next and next, and it's like almost an hour long. You feel like, well, this has happened before, but then I've noticed things are different. Like, well, this is supposed to happen next. Oh, it didn't. Oh, well, it's a little different.
That's how it happens in source code. He says it's the same, but different. Like, every time he goes
there. Right. Instead of reincarnation, going into another body, it's sort of replaying this one life over and over again, which sucks if you died as a baby, I guess.
Right.
But, you know, maybe it doesn't fill in all the holes.
See, and
but
then
that
Anthony
idea that
says that you can make different choices. So next time you relive your life, you might do it a little different. But I don't like that theory, because then you would have, like, you know, I wouldn't be born in some situations and shit like that. So, and what happens if, you know, my kids don't get that opportunity because I don't have them in one life? It just doesn't make much sense. James Hillman, though, writes this book saying that we have promises that we've made to fulfill in this life, and then that's what the daemon is like the broader picture of what the 42 contracts you have with Mott. Do you know what I mean? Like, that you have, like, mm-hmm. something that you have agreed upon from the very get-go, and then that shows up throughout your life, like Hitler with his wolves, or... So, like, he gives us one story about this little Mantador who was used to hide behind his mom's red apron when he was a kid. You know what I mean? Like, there's little things that the things that happen
in past life regression. They talk about that. The, like, a woman had been raped in her life, and she goes to a therapist, and they do past life regression, and finds out that between lives she planned that event to teach her something about her life, which healed her emotionally. Because then there was a purpose for it. And other people go to a world with, like, large turning gears, like they're part of a machine, and they kind of insert data and they go live it for whatever purpose, and they have these set goals that they need to do. I don't know if it's necessarily you become another person every time, or if I've done this, because I don't think I've had a past life. I don't think I was a king or a peasant or anything in any past life. But I think I have had this life before. And I think that my guardian angel, or whatever you want to call it, is kind of helping me out this time around, because he knows what's going to happen. And so he moves something an inch to the right, and it saves my life this time, because last time it didn't.
Kay Dick is along the same lines, because Kay Dick almost said that he knew what was behind that door with the girl and her fish necklace before he opened the door. He, like, knew what was going to happen. And then he says the deja vu and stuff – he just misinterpreted what had happened to him as being in some kind of prison or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But
the end of the Dark Tower. Should we read this hopefully? Or, you know, it's like, what is going to happen if...
He has to reboot and go from the very beginning again. Right.
Right. But is that the Wheel of Time and it goes on forever? And then I'm thinking about Ubik and how in that book you have Philip K. Dick has two different sides and you see it from both sides and one person thinks, you know, one group thinks they're alive whereas the Land of the Dead is sinking in. And then, you know, then towards the end of the book you realize, well, maybe they were alive and the other people are dead and there is no, you know, it's just all perspective, you know, where you are
like
at.
Like the others?
Right, the others.
Yeah.
Maybe the others.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the other world.
Which is
or
the,
I even put that in my...
The turn of the screw.
Yeah. Well, that's why, I mean, I don't call it the underworld or hell only. It's also the other world.
The other world.
Or Fantasia,
yeah.
Oz.
Do you ever see that
so
TV show, The Other World? Google that shit. I think it's Otherworld 1986 or something. There was actually a TV show. But it actually had, like, these people get zapped into this other world where it's marked or pocked by these triangles that have eyeballs at the top. And that they have to get to their New York. They want to get back home. Well, they were in Egypt, and they go on this tour of the pyramids at exactly this lining up of nine planets. And it zaps them into this other world. And in the other world, this guy shows them a dollar bill. He's like, my grandfather told me that this was proof that there is another world. So the people are in the other world getting this dollar bill that has the pyramid at the top of it, which is how the main the main symbol of this other world is this pyramid with the top of it. And they have to get to New York. And when they show New York City, it has three towers for the Twin Towers. It's a fucked up TV show, like 1985, 86. And right after that episode, like two episodes later, the show was canceled. Way fucked up.
That's, yeah, I love stories like that, like Terrence McKenna's story of an alternate universe, alternate hit timeline in history, and the other world living alongside ours. Problem is that there's just so many of them,
right.
You know?
Right. Which, anyways, hey, listen, guys, I gotta go. I gotta go get ready. It's been a pleasure. And Jeremy, if it's okay with you, I just recorded this as an extra 32 minutes, so we're gonna play this as like an extra little feature for the podcast too. That's okay with you.
Bonus footage? Yeah, that's fine.
All right.
And,